Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, you know, we've been at this for a while.
Yes, we have.
It was funny, I was listening to a program from 2011 that we did on wolves. So if you live in Northern California anywhere, you can, and you're out, I mean, in all seriousness, if you are out in the wilds, as it were, you can expect to encounter wolves coming in the future. They have, let's see, they've released 12 of them. I mean, what could go wrong, right? So we have 12 new wolves released in,
Plumas County?
Yeah, Plumas County. And they've gobbled up a bunch of cattle in Siskiyou County. They're going wild, like all.
Well, they're endangered, you know. They're probably.
Yeah, there's hardly any.
Yeah, they're hardly any.
So they have taken out a bunch of cattle in eastern Oregon. And the thing that I think most people are not aware of potentially is the diseases that they carry. So they don't have to bite you or lick you or any of those, but you do see hunters every now and then who will bag a wolf and you see them holding them up so they can see how big they are. Mm-hmm. You should never be in that close contact with them. They carry all sorts of heinous diseases, but they're transmitted easily to, other animals. And so if you're out hiking or doing whatever and you are, interacting with the same ground that wolves are on, you can very easily pick that stuff up.
There is some kind of weird disease they transmit.
Brucellosis. Yep. It's really bad. There's actually quite a bit of information. It's a really good book too. It's an easy read because it's done in interview fashion. And he interviewed a bunch of different people. He's a guy who thought wolves were going to be great, but he was an attorney. And his line of work was class action, big time chemical class action suits. So they did lots of research. That was something that was very, very common in their legal practice. So he put all of his legal experts into researching wolves and ended up writing a book called The Real Wolf. It's on our website, and I will put it on the page for today, just a link to it, but it's called The Real Wolf, and it's excellent. It's really very easy to follow. And just a hot tip for you. A lot of people who don't deal with this kind of thing think, oh, well, we'll just put collars on them and then we'll know where they are. The problem is the agencies that monitor those collars never release that information in real time because they don't want you to know where they are. And so you can't protect yourself from them. If you're a landowner, you have cattle or whatever, you can't know if they're near your cattle because they won't give you that information in real time. And when the collars are on, you have to catch them and change the batteries on a regular basis because the batteries go dead. Well, the more you catch them and handle them, the more habituated they become to humans. And that's when you find them. Like up in eastern Oregon, I was on a call with some folks last week, and the wolf was maybe 50 yards out, and the guy was shooting over its head, which technically – according to the Endangered Species Act, you're not supposed to do. But he was doing that because it was coming at him. He had kids and the whole thing. He's shooting over this animal's head. It's supposed to be a wild animal. Didn't even flinch. So it...
He must have been wearing tasty-looking clothing.
Yeah, he was covered with, I don't know, whatever whatever they like. So anyway, it's a real concern. So if you live near a forested area, if you spend time... out in those areas, you should really, really pay attention.
Well, 12 wolves is going to turn into a lot of wolves in a couple of years. I mean, they have big litters, and I don't know how many of the 12 were females, but...
Well, here it is. Historic move for wolf conservation. 12 collared gray wolves have been released in Northern California. Terrific. Marks the largest number of satellite collared wolves in the state, offering a new chance to monitor and protect these majestic creatures, aka apex predators. The project aims to provide crucial data on wolf populations, blah, blah, blah. They are both male and female. They come from three different packs. And bottom line is wolves are one of the only apex predators. So everybody thinks, oh, they're just going to live out in the wilderness and just only eat when they're hungry. No, wolves kill for three reasons. They attack. How about that? They don't always kill. So it's teaching, it's sport, and it's food. So a lot of times they will they'll maim animals, cattle, you know, wild animals. They just maim them. They don't eat them. They leave them. So they just mess them up enough to, so they die a slow, painful death or don't die at all and you have to put them down. But they'll do that for sport and to teach their young and sometimes for food. So anyway, it's something to be considered. So if you still think wolves are terrific, you should probably rethink that. And I will gather our programs and probably put a tab on the top of the webpage for you because it's fixing to become a problem, as they say. So moving on to South Africa with our guest, Dr. Harry Booyens.
Shaking things up in South Africa.
So for those of you who have not caught the shows with Harry Booyens before, well, I don't know where you've been, but what the heck. So we have a tab on the top of WeThePeopleRadio.us that says South Africa. So Dr. Harry Booyens is an internationally recognized multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist, originally from South Africa. And I'm going to have to update this because it says here a 360-year bloodline in that country, but we've been talking to him for a while, so probably better change the number. He lives with his family on the forested slopes outside Vancouver, Canada. Watch out for the wolves. His life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. It included interaction with the United States and British defense establishment. He applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy and writes with factual accuracy and engaging style on these subjects. But he's more fun to listen to. Although the reading is good, he's really fun to hear. Hard evidence is a trademark of his work and has won him a number of awards. He focuses on making Americans aware of what is happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general and the United States of America in particular. So with the advent of President Trump's election, there have been a lot of developments on the South African front, so we thought it would make perfect sense to have Dr. Harry Booyens pop on with us and give us his unique vantage point. It's all you, Harry.
Harry, how you doing?
Hi. I believe I hear the bull over there.
You hear the what?
I just got to check with you, Aaron. He's not been naughty, has he? I don't have to come and sort him out.
I've been behaving.
No, no, Bill. Bill's pretty even keel. He doesn't. He doesn't get out of the box that much.
Yeah.
I had him hauling bushes yesterday. He's kind of tired today.
Before I launch into anything on South Africa, I really have to tell you guys that I am so happy, not just for myself, but for you guys, that Kash Patel made it to being the chief of the FBI.
Yeah, that's going to be an exciting times coming. Yeah, we definitely needed a revamp there.
Does he ever know where all the bodies are buried?
Yeah, I think that was part of the angst. How about that?
I listened to part of the speech that President Trump gave. I think it was to CPAC?
Yes.
Yesterday. And it's noticeable that the loudest cheering was when he mentioned the appointment of or the confirmation of Kash Patel.
Yeah, that's a real game changer. Well, the fact that we have so many people who are not just the same old thing, you know, it's not just same old thing, different day. I think we'll do. You know, it'll go a long way to fixing some stuff.
Oh, the FBI definitely needs some rework there. And like you said, Harry, he knows where the issues lie, who they lie with, and I think he has a pretty good handle on how to fix it.
Well, it's like you look at Tom Homan with all the immigration stuff, and that is just starting, but. You know, I mean, we've been watching. Do you guys get that in your news up there? Have you seen Tom Homan over the last few years? speaking about the border? Is that not really in your?
No, one picks it up. But my comment is Tom Homan is like straight out of central casting for the ultimate cop, isn't he? I mean,
he is. That guy just has no written on his face. No. Like,
yeah, he's like the untouchable.
Like if he was your dad, you don't ask him for anything. It's just no.
It's like if he's the cop and he stops you in the road,
you
know,
just go get in his car and forget it.
I went too fast. I'm sorry.
You should just handcuff yourself and just go to jail.
Let me put it this way. I was stopped by two New York cops once because I'd inadvertently crossed a stop sign in the middle of a block.
Oh.
It wasn't at a crossroads, it was just a stop in the middle of the block.
Okay.
So they pulled me over and I turned down my window and I looked as nicely at them as I could and I said in my most perfect British impression, I said, "Good morning, officers. Have I committed some kind of offense?"
How'd that work out for you?
They let me go.
They were like, "Oh, it's some dope from England. We'll let him slide." Yeah, not Tom Homan, though.
They said, "Yes, sir. You went across a stop sign." I said, "I'm terribly sorry. I didn't see it." You know, and they let me go.
Nice.
Now, the reason I mentioned that is that if it had been Tom Homan stopping me at Tom Homan, I would have. I guess I would have turned down the window and I would have ducked down in front of my driver's seat or something.
Yeah. Brace for impact. He has brace for impact written all over his face. It's kind of, anyway, I mean, it's nice finally, you know, to have somebody who's really serious about law enforcement.
Yeah.
You know,
that situation, you know, it's completely untenable. And that is also how South Africa turned out the way it is now.
Just give up on the laws.
Yeah. And well, I can get back into it later, but there's a lesson on that subject from down there. Okay. I can tell you that back in 1976, I sat in the tea room of our physics department with my physics professor talking to my American lecturer. At the time he was teaching, and they were talking about illegal immigration in the U.S. and illegal immigration in South Africa and the parallels between them. 1976. Okay?
Wow.
So been there, done that, I know how it turns out in the end. South Africa, and why on earth are we talking about it? Somewhere way back in history, someone told me that when you're dealing with the American folks, be sure that you put the word America at every 1,000 words. You have to mention it once. And sorry, just messing with you guys. But otherwise, you lose their interest.
Oh, well. Okay. The other thing is that I never run into anybody who says, "Oh, yeah, I knew that South Africa had a lot of parallels with the U.S." No one knows that.
Nobody.
Well, most don't know where it is.
Well, there's that.
So you need to tell me if you need to take a break before we launch into things first.
We probably should. And unfortunately, I've got the shade up in the front, so now I can't see in the engineer's room. So she's waving at me. We're all good. All righty. So we'll take a little break. We are here with Dr. Harry Booyans. We're going to talk about South Africa. And there have been a lot of developments since President Trump was elected. So stay tuned. You'll find out what they are. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And Bill makes it back to his chair in time. We'll be right back. Or we'll stay here and just keep talking. No, we're definitely taking a break. But there's no sound. Just me. stalling for
no,
time.
I'm here. I'm listening. I just don't have anything to say.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Say, the dreams on which I'm dying are the best I ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad world. Mad world. Mad world.
Didn't see, that's for all the people out there who didn't see the election of Trump coming.
they are
absolutely running in circles, and they do think the world has gone mad. You know, with the Department of Government Efficiency, it's not a real department. It's a short-term project, and Elon Musk is not elected because there is only one member of the executive branch who's elected. That's the president. So stop saying he's not elected. It just makes you sound like you failed civics. And you know, the other bit of it is he's an advisor to the president. So he's not an employee of the government. He's not getting paid. He is advising the president. So all the action that's being taken is being directed by the president. Presidents get lots of advisors. But somebody had actually our former sheriff sent me a text this morning. And it said that the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, should be renamed to the Federal Agency for Financial Oversight, which would make it FAFO. And that would have been a lot more fun. And I don't know why someone didn't think of that sooner. But, yeah, there's been a lot going on. And so with all of these, I mean, Dr. Bouillon's, it's only been a month. And I think President Trump has done more than Joe Biden did in 4 years.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's just been like a you know, people always say, like, it's like drinking from a fire hose. I'm like, I'm not sure what's bigger than a fire hose, but
yeah, really,
whatever that is. Like,
I mean, in just the first month, look what he's done.
Maybe like a hydraulic mining hose.
We got 4 years of this to look forward to.
I know, it's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
But so on the South African front, which is obviously something that, you know, a lot of us have missed because there's been so much going on. What are you seeing the ripple effect there?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Here in Canada, zero. But in South Africa, that government is running in what the Brits call square circles.
Yeah, they have
and
to be.
They, you know, their first reaction was sort of, how dare you? And he's misinformed and all kinds of stuff. But I thought, they slowly coming to the realization that they're going to have to do things differently. So we'll have to see how they ultimately react. But I was thinking I could read you the actual executive order that President Trump issued.
Oh, okay.
Because it's interesting. So let me just get it on my screen here. Where is it now? I clicked it. Why is it not showing? There you go, Microsoft. The wonders of Bill Gates. Okay. It says, executive order addressing egregious actions of the Republic of South Africa. Okay. And I woke up to this on Saturday morning the 8th. And my wife had stomped off to go and look at getting some coffee going. And I switch on the TV and I'm looking at this and my jaw drops. Okay. Because it says, in shocking disregard of its citizens' rights, the Republic of South Africa recently enacted Expropriation Act 13 of 2024 to enable the government of South Africa to seize ethnic minority Afrikaners' agricultural property without compensation. This act follows countless government policies designed to dismantle equal opportunity in employment, education, and business, and hateful rhetoric and government actions fueling disproportionate violence against racially disfavored landowners. That's pretty to the point.
Yes. Wow.
In addition, South Africa has taken aggressive positions towards the United States and its allies, including accusing Israel and not Hamas of genocide in the International Court of Justice and reinvigorating its relations with Iran to develop commercial, military, and nuclear arrangements. I should tell you about that nuclear bit. The United States cannot support the government of South Africa's commission of rights violations in its country or its undermining United States foreign policy, which poses national security threats to our nation, our allies, our African partners, and our interests. Section 2, policy. It is the policy of the United States that, as long as South Africa continues these unjust and immoral practices that harm our nation, A, the United States shall not provide aid or assistance to South Africa, semicolon, and B, the United States shall promote the resettlement of Afrikaner refugees escaping government-sponsored race-based discrimination, including racially discriminatory property confiscation. And then, just in case there's confusion, it goes to Section 3, assistance. All executive departments and agencies, including the U.S. Agency for International Development, you remember that one? USAID?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Shall, to the maximum extent allowed by law, halt foreign aid or assistance delivered or provided to South Africa and shall promptly exercise all available authorities and discretion to halt such aid or assistance. B, the head of each agency may permit the provision of any such foreign aid or assistance that, in the discretion of that agency, is necessary or appropriate. And then Section 4, if that still leaves any confusion, the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Homeland Security shall take appropriate steps consistent with the law to prioritize humanitarian relief, including admission and resettlement through the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program for Afrikaners in South Africa who are victims of unjust racial discrimination. That's all of them, because there's 142 wow. laws against white folks there. And it's used actively to particularly go after Afrikaners like myself. And then it goes on with the regular stuff that you would expect on an executive order. So Trump was quite clear. And as Catherine Levitt explains, he dots the I's and crosses the T's on each executive order. And he sometimes decides which letters should be capitalized. So it's not like he didn't know every word that went in here.
Harry, do you know what level of aid has been given to South Africa up to this point, and how is this going to impact them?
There's several hundreds of millions approaching a billion.
Mm. Well, that'll get their attention.
Yeah, and there's also, I don't want to burden your listeners with all kinds of complexities of Africa, but there's a thing that the U.S., I think the U.S. started it. It's called AGOA, which is the African, I don't know what it all stands for, but it's basically a preferential deal to help African countries, and it essentially removes tariffs for African countries to give them a leg up. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so if AGOA disappears, that's like 300 million right there. Now, hang on. I got to think for a moment. Are we talking $1 billion or $1 billion rand? You're going to have to just suspend judgment on that for a minute. I can't swear to things right now. But in South African terms, you're talking serious pain here. Let me put it to you. There is no way that ANC government can ignore this. Okay? They're already on TV saying, sorry, boys, we're bankrupt.
Oh, now, really?
On top of that, you have this. There's not except for the west of the country, there's not a road that is not potholed. There is not a light bulb that can stay on all day. The water is insecure, and the black people are terribly unhappy. But, fundamentally, humans tend to be racist, and so they vote for the ANC because it has black faces. And that's it. Sorry, but it's true. So what I wanted to do, having read you that executive order, I would like to take you back to an earlier event, and I know I'm always doing this. So this is 22 August 2018, and you guys may remember me talking about this. This was a tweet from President Trump in 2018, and he said, I have asked the Secretary of State, Secretary Pompeo, to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers. And then he put at Fox News and at Tucker Carlson behind it. Okay. So this thing of President Trump comes quite a distance. So forgive me if I'm a supporter of President Trump. Forgive me if I was dejected as all hell when they messed up that 2020 election. But I have my own, I don't know what to call it, emotional take on this. And that is, I've told my friends that no help ever seemed on the horizon for us. It seemed like everyone just wants us dead. All other nations get talked about, whether it's the Rohingyas or the folks in the west of China, or it's the Kurds or whoever, but never us. We never count. And so I told them, I think finally God sent his imperfect angel. And his name is not Gabriel. Mm. His name is Donald.
Yeah. Well, another thing that is not talked about a lot in regards to South Africa is their cozy relationship with Russia.
Yeah, and I can wax lyrically about that. That includes military exercises mm-hmm. off the coast of South Africa with Russia. And it includes, I don't have it at hand here immediately, but I can find it again. There's an extensive list of transgressions by South Africa, including a known, I think it's the Lady R or something like that, is a Russian freighter that suddenly went dark as it went past Cape Town. Stayed dark for several hours, and then suddenly it appeared on the log systems again, some distance east of Cape Town. Well, it was spotted in the night loading and offloading things at a port near Cape Town, and everyone in South Africa is convinced that was weapons. Mm-hmm. It is also true that there's something, or this is what several writers maintain, is that there's around 750 kilograms, that would be roughly 3/4 of a ton, of enriched uranium left over from the South African atomic bomb effort that was shut down in 1980. And I had a little bit of exposure peripherally to that, not through my own activities, but purely through a visitor. And there's some of that stuff left, and folks are concerned that South Africa is supplying that to Iran.
Nice.
So let me put this bluntly. I know that it's the country where I was born. I still love it to death. It's a wonderful place. It is such a God-rending pity that that government is there. It's a greater pity that people like Bill Clinton help them to be there with money. It's a pity that USAID money has been used to prop up that government. It's a rank communist one, as you can see, and I'll explain later why I say that. And I have been warning that it is an enemy of yours. You need to understand. The U.S. has a remarkable inability to tell friend from foe. It never ceases to amaze me. You know, and in a certain sense, John Stewart was right way back in 2003 when he said, we only got one letter wrong, you know, talking about Iran and Iraq.
Yeah.
So there's a long history of that, and it's not as though you're alone. The Brits made the same mistakes in South Africa back in 1803 and lost half the colony as a result of that. So what I'm trying to say is that this thing comes quite a distance with President Trump. It's not as though somebody has now suddenly wrongly informed him. Back in 2018, the president of the country, who's still the president of South Africa, he had something to say about that. He went on Bloomberg, and here's what he said, and I hope this is going to transmit correctly, so tell me if it makes horrible sounds and things. But I'm going to play a clip and hope.
Nope. Just quietness.
And our end is all good.
How about we take a quick break, since it's the right time anyway, and then we'll see if we can't get his sound file to come through.
I conclude you didn't hear that at all.
No, it was downright silent. So hold on 5 seconds, and we'll talk to you while the commercial break is playing. So you are listening to We the People. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyans. And you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I can't do everything, but I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with them.
Upside down.
Upside down.
Yep.
Okay, Harry, you want to try to play your clip? I don't know what happened last time, but we got silence.
I have no explanation for this, for those of a technical bent. All I can say is I play the clip. It goes into my mixer. The mixer shows it's running. It goes to my... my interface that goes into the computer to talk to Skype.
Oh.
The interface says, I'm happy.
Christina said to send it to her and she'll play it. Can you send it to her through the chat here on our Skype?
Okay, so let me see how do
well,
I
we,
do that.
Well, we talk amongst ourselves.
Yeah,
shoot her the link. There's more than one way to skin a cat. Look at all these. Look, well, Christina's not old. She's young, but I was going to say, look at all these old people doing technology.
I'm an old soul.
Yes. Oh, okay. You want to be an old soul? You want to just fit in?
Unfortunately, I am. I can do nothing with it.
Hitting your senior stride early.
Can I send this in the chat?
Yeah, sure. Somehow? Why not?
How do I do that?
I don't know.
Just copy the link and paste it in where say type a message, and we'll play it in our end.
I got a collection of MP3s. That's what I got.
Deal. That's also you can drag them and put them
in the chat.
Yes, just like a regular photo. Oh. Now non-technologies are helping us.
Yeah, this was kind of like when my mom was in cellist, and she was responsible for sending the symphony notes to the other people in the symphony, and so she needed me to show her how to send an attachment over the phone. That was an hour and a half. I could never get back. I really miss her, and so maybe it was a great hour and a half. But I actually was supposed to be on a conference call. I literally had a headset in one ear and one in the other ear. And did both at the same time, but this has been markedly faster.
Okay. So
hit it, Harry.
I'm giving
oh, no, Christina.
Them in the sequence that I think we should play them.
Okay.
So the first one is Ramaphosa. That's the president. And this is him in 2018 after President Trump's first tweet in his life about South Africa.
On the tweet itself, he was clearly misinformed. And whoever gave him that information was completely wrong. There are no killings of farmers or white farmers in South Africa. There's no land grab in South Africa. We are involved in a process of discussing land reform. Land was the original sin in the history of South Africa. We are seeking to put right what was done wrong.
Hmm. Yeah, I believe that.
Right. So that's the president. Now, first mistake is to use the word misinformation or misinformed with a guy like Donald Trump. Of all the people on God's little green earth, it is the one man you should never use those words with for very good legal reasons. Okay? It's right up there with shooting a bullet through his ear. And for the same reasons, had the same effect, right? Russian disinformation, misinformation. Now, if there was any lack of clarity as to what was going on in South Africa at that time and is still going on, if you could possibly play the next clip, which should say Malema, here is the leader of the third biggest political party, used to be the youth leader of Ramaphosa's own party. This is him on a huge stage in a sports stadium as big as the biggest you've got. And they got the people not just filling the stands, but filling the actual playground of the field itself. And he's on a makeshift stage. He's dancing. And here is what he's doing. So if you could play that one, Malema.
Shoot to kill, Hamaza, kill the poor, the farmer, kill the poor, the farmer, brr, pa.
Something bonkers is happening in South Africa. A major political movement drawing stadiums of tens of thousands of people has as its organizing principle the killing of white people. Julius Malema, the head of the Economic Freedom Fighters, openly chants, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. It's not just rhetoric. This is a man who's made a career out of hate-mongering, singing songs about killing white farmers, and advocating for the seizure of land without compensation. His words aren't just provocative. They are a clear call to genocide.
I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm saying to you, we've not called for the killing of white people, at least for now. I can't guarantee the future.
Most aspiring political leaders should at least be able to rule out genocide, I would think. And even more unsettling is the fact that the crowds continue to listen to Malema and espouse his hateful ideology. None other than Elon Musk, the South African-born tech mogul, is calling out this madness. Musk didn't just post on X. He launched a full-blown orbital strike on Malema, calling him a genocidal lunatic. Seems the only thing more explosive than Musk's rockets might be his tweets about the South African political landscape. President Trump, fed up with the situation, has just announced he's cutting off aid to South Africa. That's right, no more American dollars for a country that seems to be flirting with the idea of genocide under Malema's watch and under his growing influence. Trump's move signals a stark message. America won't fund regimes that echo the darkest chapters of history. During my time in Congress, I had one staff member who was sounding the alarm on this very issue a year ago this month. Listen to my former legislative counsel, John Wilson, on my podcast, sharing the risk of this danger.
We know exactly what they mean by decolonize, and we need to take them at their word. They mean murder and displace, and that's what they're trying to do to the Boers and the farmers in South Africa, and I don't foresee any globalist institution condemning that.
Okay, that's the story.
That's pretty straightforward. It's really nice when they say the quiet part out loud, because then
it's kind of hard to deny.
Yeah.
Guys, what you need to understand that party, this is hubris, and they are so they have such a level of hubris coursing through their veins that they believe they can confess anything and everything. And as their lips flap, so the history comes out, and you find out who did what, when, why, how, and with whom. Okay? It's bloodlust, pure and simple. Okay. So, they keep on doing this, and they keep on providing, you know, evidence for guys like me. It's kind of difficult to get past that. That, Aaron, was your absolutely favorite candidate for Attorney General Matt Gaetz.
And he's turned out to be so amazing. You know, it's funny. I just always had that guy pegged a long time ago. I had no proof of it, but it just, there's something about the guy. And the longer it's gone, the more that's come out. It's like, huh, well.
Well, you know, from where I sit, I hear you. I respect all of that. I understand it, and it's probably good that he possibly didn't get the job. But as long as he transmits this stuff, he's going to get my help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he never could have been confirmed. He's been showing members of Congress photos of himself with underage girls for years, and now that's all been made public. So, oops.
Okay. So
speaking of hubris.
So now connecting it back to the story. So I've sketched you 2018. I've sketched you what happened after 2018. I have, you now know Malema, the guy who's dancing on the stage saying, let's kill him. But it goes much further back than that. The next clip, it says Mandela Amabulu. You can hear, you know, the America's most beloved hero outside the country. Mandela, the guy who's been dressed up to you folks as being an angel who sits at the right hand of God, who walks on water, could do no wrong, and is in general an angel of peace and mercy. Okay? I want you to listen to the following short clip. This is him at the day of the dissolution of the military wing of that ANC government. In 1990, before they assumed power, the agreement was that they would stop their military wing. Please let the record reflect that the man who created that military wing was someone called Rolihlahla Mandela, otherwise known as Nelson Mandela. He got the job to create that military wing. So, they're standing in a bundle. All the TV of the world is there. He's been released from jail, or he had been released from jail recently, just before, and now he's dissolving his military wing that he himself had created. And I want you to hear what they're singing, and then I'm going to decode it, and we may have to play it a second time so you can listen for the words. But first, just hear them. Mandela Amabulu. So there you go. There you go. And the words that I trust you heard were Bulala Amabulu. They sang it twice, so you can be sure to hear it. Maybe Aaron or Bill, you got to tell me, do you recall hearing that in that clip twice?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just now? I don't remember you playing this one before, though.
Yeah, I've played it before.
Okay.
So it's Bulala Amabulu. Do you know what that means?
No.
Bulala means kill.
Oh, well, there you go.
And Amabulu means the Bura, the very guys that Malema's singing about. That's me. Any white guy in South Africa. We're all called Amabulu.
Oh.
What happens with the Nguni black languages is that they use the prefix Ama to mean the people. Like they use the term Amabenzi to describe people with Mercedes Benzes who are rich and chase around town. So they call them the Amabenzi. So it's a cool way that they have of handling things, you know. They just, if they got like a concept, they put the word Ama in front, and that means the people who do this or who have this or are like this or whatever. Whatever word you choose, stick Ama in front, and you, that's the nation. That's the group you're targeting. And so they couldn't say the word Bura as the Afrikaners do, so they said it's Bulu. Amabulu, farmers. The word boer in Dutch means farmer. No deeper than that. That's it. It just means farmer. So he's singing, we're going to, sorry, I should explain that way back when the word Amabulu was first conceived, all the people, all the whites that the black people knew were farmers. It was the only thing you met on the eastern front of the country was a farmer. So to them, white people were farmers. They were Amabulu. So the word has stuck, and today they are still called Amabulu. That's why my book is called Amabulu.
It's so funny. So, you must have told this. You told us this a while ago, and we slept and forgot.
So this is not new. This much exalted hero of the left in the U.S. sang that in 1990 already. They sang it long before that, but that's the case that was recorded. There you heard it. It's on YouTube. You can find it. So that's the history behind this stuff. Okay? So the next clip I've got there is a farmer by the name of Duncan Prinsloo. Prinsloo is a very common Afrikaans surname. And Duncan lost his wife in a farm attack, and he was very, very badly hurt. He was shot in the back. And so the clip called Duncan Prinsloo, it's kind of self-explanatory. He's standing on a rugby field kind of place with a microphone, and he's talking to the general population. He's obviously very hurt. This goes back some years. The attack took place in 2009, November, I believe. So maybe you just want to hear what the reaction is of a typical South African farmer who's been attacked and has lost his family.
Oh, it looks like we have to run away for the news. I dropped the ball.
Okay.
We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And we will see if we can pull off this hour without any
technical difficulties.
Without any screw-ups.
Yeah.
The last one was mine. I was busy working on something. I hear Christina knocking on the window. I look down. It says 12:59. It's like, oh, well, that was somewhat unceremonious. Welcome to the news. I thought it was interesting, Dr. Bouillon's, by the way, our guest is Dr. Harry Bouillon's. And if you have never heard shows with him before, you're missing the boat. Go to wethepeopleradio.us and click on the tab that says South Africa. We have a bunch of shows going back into 2018. Today's February 23rd, 2025, just in case we play this later and you're wondering why the president's only been in office for a month. Every now and then we have things that, you know, they date the show. Like we had some stuff that had, I forget, it was something that was done during, the Biden era, but it was a Trump program and I don't know, got everybody all confused. So, you know, be flexible. The archives go back a long way. We've had multiple presidents over the years. So I thought it was interesting in the news block there for just the 5 minutes. They had two shows on different places in Africa, not South Africa, but in Africa. So you guys are making a lot of news.
Yeah. Never for the right reasons.
No, not exactly. But it was interesting. I did speak with a guy whose sister worked for USAID. And just for those people that are still, you know, wringing their hands about the wonderful work they do. I'm sure not everybody's wrong all the time. You know, the old broken clock theory. But, interestingly enough, this guy's, he said the women in his family were very upset about that going away because many of them were involved with that. And the one sister lives in some mansion somewhere in Africa, which is a big place, but somewhere there, she lives in some mansion in a gated housing thing with drivers and servants and the whole shooting match, works for USAID, has no idea what she does, and the husband just plays golf all day. And I thought, wow.
That's a great gig if you can get it.
Kind of made my wallet cry a little bit.
Guys, you know, back in the mid-1990s, just as the ANC was taking over South Africa, we got exposed in our organization, which is a technological R&D place. You got exposed to people who wanted to do this project and that project and another project. And that was the first time in my life that I ran into USAID because the ANC was mentioning left, right, and center, oh, we'll get USAID money for this and for that and for the other. And I thought I smelt a rat.
And for our people that have not listened before, tell them what the ANC is.
The African National Congress, notice the word national, the African National Congress is at present the government of South Africa. And prior to 1994, it had a military wing that bombed people, including my mother's apartment building. They killed women and children on the first bomb, and the second one, the police grabbed her and ran with her, my mother, because she was standing right next to the bomb. So I have a little bit of prejudice against the ANC, but I don't need that. They are so utterly incompetent that even the former, what do they call them, comrades who fought against that government are now coming out saying that the situation is untenable. This ANC government is a complete disaster. And I actually have a clip available here of a leading black advocate in South Africa, a man who went to jail under apartheid, etc., finally saying he can take it no more. Here's the truth. Things were better under apartheid. You know, live with a comment because it's the truth.
Wow.
I'll send that, but maybe we want to leave it for a minute. At the moment, the issue is I wanted you guys to hear the response to this Malema guy that's shouting, kill, kill, kill.
Yeah.
This is the response of one farmer. I'd like you to know, because you don't see video, he can barely walk with crutches. He's got people to help him. And his wife is dead. Okay. Obviously, he himself cannot farm anymore. He's beyond what can be helped. And so he got hold of a microphone, and this following clip is what he said. His name is Duncan Prinsloo, and he farmed about 25 miles east of where I lived.
All good.
Oops.
Yeah, that one. That one didn't
go. He's in there.
Yes. He's all good, but something disconnected.
he's all good. He's all good, but not that good.
We have some technical issue, but not from our side.
All right, we lied about that all being over with. It's not over with. Is this April 1st? God, not yet, huh? I think I have a meeting on April 1st. I meant to double check that it was real.
Shall we just carry on?
Yes, we'll just press on. Yeah. Oh, okay. Maybe we won't press on. Definitely press on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am very proud being a South African today. For everybody that has made the effort to come and lift their voices about the farm murder situation in our country. I live in Bronkhorstspruit, and in 2008, the 20th of the September of November, the night, we were attacked. I was shot through the back, and my wife, unfortunately, was killed.
Oh.
I want to say to each South African today that if you go and sit and have a meal, please be thankful to the farmers, because that's where it's coming from. But I want to say to Malema today, who is the big instigator of farm murders, I want to challenge him today. I will give him a rifle. I will load it. And I will stand still so that he can finish what they began. But I want to see if he's a man, because he can shout out to the youngsters and tell them to go and murder the farmers on their farms. But I want to give him a weapon so that he can come and shoot me where everybody can see that, so that he can show whether he's a man or whether he's a mouse. I don't even call him Mr. Malema, because Mr. still refers to a man. So I want to challenge him today, and I'm very, very serious about that. I don't mind dying. He can come and finish what they didn't finish, and let's see whether he has guts to do what he teaches the youngsters to do.
Wow.
So there you got it. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the reaction from the typical farmer on the ground. And what's been happening to those folks is beyond description. Okay. There's companies that hire out to clean up the murder scenes, and those people are falling over. They can't handle it. Okay. It's too much for them. So this has been going on now for more than 2 decades. It's got to stop. So, you know, This is where President Trump comes in. This is one of the most unholy outrages on the planet today. It's got to stop.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that is. Is it just that no one? Why is it continuing on? I mean, how are they? Are they just able to do whatever they want and there are not enough people to rise up against them?
The media does not report on it anymore, and the Afrikaner folks have got no power. There's nothing they can do. They just have to sit and wait to die. The government – so I need to get on to the subject of how the government goes about, in effect, perpetrating this. And how they fool you guys, okay? When I say you guys, I mean generally they fool Americans in particular. They play with numbers. And I've said to another podcast host that the one thing to always remember about communists is they cannot do maths. And when they can do maths, they can basically only do subtraction and addition. They struggle with addition. Mostly they can do subtraction. And everything to them is a zero-sum game. When they walk into a place and there's food on the table, they decide how they can divvy up that food. They'll eat it until their stomachs bloat, and then they lie down, and then tomorrow they'll beg for money from USAID. That's Africa. That's how it works. Okay, there is no concept of future. I will tell you this much. Back in 1986, I was on a flight from Hong Kong to San Francisco. And there's a guy that sat down with me. It turns out to be American. We're sitting on the two seats on the right-hand side. And on a 747. And He asks me, "You, what kind of line are you in?" And I told him, I'm a R&D manager. And I said, "And you?" And if you'll forgive the expression, he said, "I'm eating chicken shit." And I said, "I guess you mean fertilizer." He said, "You got that right." And he said to me, "Where are you from?" I said, "South Africa." And he said, "Ah. Yeah, I was in Upper Volta in Africa, and now my American terminology leaves me on the lurch just a little bit. If you didn't go to Vietnam, you signed up to serve in the, and you went overseas and you did good works for the country in various places." He was one of those guys.
Oh, okay.
And the phrase will come back to me. You have like a myriad of agencies. It's tough for a guy who's not living in the U.S.
I was thinking he went to Canada. That was the first thing that came to mind. I'm like, he came to live next door to you? No.
Call it the Peace Corps or
oh,
whatever.
Peace Corps. Yeah, okay. Sure.
I think that's probably what it was. And I said, "So what did you do?" He said, "Well, I helped people to kind of count their harvest, put it in bags, and then put it in storage so they have something for the following year." So I looked at him and I thought, yeah, well-meaning American. God, do we ever have a constant stream of those? So I didn't say that. I just said, "So what do you think happened when you left, after you left?" And he said, "Oh, they died."
Oh, whoa. Wow.
That's a refreshingly honest.
I was going to say, fairly clear-eyed about the take on that.
Yeah, these days they call it Burkina Faso. In my day, it was Upper Volta. So he served there when it was Upper Volta. And he said, "Because they have no idea of future, and after I left, I'm pretty sure they ate all of that, and they didn't ever put it there again." Okay, that's Africa. It's a completely fatalistic culture. The culture of Black Africa is fatalistic. And they will work with any kind of overlordship, and they will eat what they see, and then if there isn't food, they die. And that's just the way it is. And you can send aid until you are blue in the face. It will never work out. Never. I guarantee you that I'll write that with a classic nipped pen in my own blood. That's how sure I am.
So taking over the farmland, killing all the farmers so they can ostensibly run the farms, which isn't what's happening, as we've proven in earlier shows.
So now I can get to what that really is. So that government tells the world that white farmers own 80%, that percentage they lie about varies, but it's typically around 80% of the land. So that is what everybody then goes and prints. And you'll find those numbers in the BBC, Washington Post, New York Times, you know all the classic left-wing things. They will all echo those numbers, right? But what they're not telling you is that that statistic actually means owns 80% of the individually owned agricultural land, farmland. And farmland is created from bush by some or other farmer's sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's no such thing as just farmland that God deposited on the earth.
What?
It has to be actually worked and created and so forth. Okay. So that's the first thing they don't mention. What they don't mention to you is that the white farmers actually own exactly 21.8 or 0.9, depending on how you divide, but 21.x% of the surface area of that country. That's what they own, 21.8%. Of that, something between 35 and 40% is in the arid west of the country where you couldn't plant a damn thing to save your soul. Okay, it looks like pieces of southern Arizona, like the or the Sonora Desert, or parts of southern Nevada, the bits that get to 40 degrees centigrade. Okay, so I don't know how often people go there. I've been to all of those, and there are places there that look and smell, literally smell, like the dry west of South Africa. The only thing you can do there is keep goats. A little bit further east, maybe you can keep sheep. In terms of the, results that the land renders, that western part renders a quarter of what the eastern part can do. Purely for lack of soil quality and lack of rain. And to get a mental picture of this in words, I would suggest that folks consider South Africa's shape to be, if you took a triangle and you stood it on one of it, an equilateral triangle, equal-sided triangle, if you stuck that on a sharp tip upside down in front of you, and you cut the bottom, you go down the middle, and when you get halfway, you cut it through. You take that piece you cut off, you stick it on top, and you slide it to the far right. That's pretty much what South Africa looks like. So it's a truncated triangle with a cut-off bit stuck at the top to the one side, to the right-hand side. If you drew a line through that big piece that runs parallel to the west coast of that diagram, everything to the west of that you can treat as desert. The bit to the east is what's worth talking about in terms of who's got the land. The west, yeah, a couple of goats.
Okay, it sounds balmy.
So then,
Harry, hold that thought, and we have to I'm tardy on our little break here. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyens. You can find all of the shows that we have done with him on South Africa, and I guarantee you 99% of the information you didn't know already. And you can find that at
wethepeopleradio.us.
You see, it's all clear. You are meant to be here. From the beginning,
so destroying all the farm country on the eastern side is, I mean, are they pretending that they're going to run these farms? Just out of curiosity? Uh-oh. Is Harry in the cone of silence? Harry, are you back?
Looks like we are connected. Let me try to text him.
Oh, Harry.
It really just kind of boggles my mind that these people are always in search of food, but yet they go out and destroy these highly productive farms that produce a major portion of their local grown food, and then they don't learn how to run them and continue to create food for themselves.
Well, even, I mean, moreover than that, kill the guys.
Well, yeah.
Like, I mean, kill the guys that are running the farm. You know, demonize them and kill them.
Yeah, what is the...
Yeah, what's the end game, Harry? Yeah. What do they think they're going to accomplish?
Right. The point is that I do need to make you guys aware of is you're making a profound error of assumption right at the beginning of these questions. And that is, don't think that other cultures think the way you do. And if I may abuse the accent just a little bit, this thing of the logic, it is the white man's thing.
So, it is just madness then.
Yeah, the mathematics, it is also the white man tang.
Wow.
So, if you're not going to do the maths, you're not going to be logical, what's left?
Yeah.
Eat, and if it's not there, die.
Yeah.
That just almost seems a little too straightforward.
I come from a country, guys, I'm serious about this. Some years ago, in the provincial government meeting, one of the representatives of the rural black folks stood up and she said, I want the government researchers, that's me, government researchers to find out what it is that the lightning wants and why it only strikes the black people.
What?
I want to, they must find out what it is that the lightning he wants.
Whoa.
And why it only strikes the black people.
Did you get right on that?
Yeah, right. you know, the point is you need to understand that a soul is attributed to the lightning. Everything happens with a reason and a force of malice behind it. There's no such thing as statistics. There's no such thing as logic. There's no such thing as planning. Things happen and somebody has bewitched you and you got to find out who.
Wow.
It's
how do you work? I mean, how do you negotiate with that? I mean, how do you solve that?
I don't know, but various British governments and various American leaders insisted that we should subject ourselves to these folks. Okay?
Yeah, throwing money at it's obviously been incredibly successful.
Over centuries, we've helped wherever we could. We've done our best. But, you know, we're outnumbered 9-1, still busting our rear ends trying to help these folks. Meanwhile, you know, the world turns on us because we committed the ultimate sin of being a minority. The ultimate sin of being a white minority. There is nothing more despicable, disgusting, more reviled than a white minority. Okay, that's been our problem. That's what was done to us. Is this the point where I can mention the communist professor for calibration?
Sure. We'd love a good communist
this
professor story.
1979, a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Harry recently got his PhD, has just come to the wonderful IBM at Yorktown Heights in New York, and I get to share an office with a Danish engineering professor who's my senior by about 10 years. He talks about South Africa, and we argue a little bit about things, and finally I tell him, Jörn, this is our situation. We get no help. We get no assistance. We get nothing to help us. Everyone's against us. What is it you want us to do? And he stood up, stretched himself to his full 6'5" or 7". All he still missed was his horns on his head from a helmet to be a Viking. And he sort of spat down at me. You are a sick anachronism. You are a blot on the name of Europe. You should just die.
Wow.
So you've heard that before from me. The point is, that is a school of thought. And that is actually the school of thought that dominates the left. And it dominates the people in your country on the left. I have no illusions or delusions. They want us dead. We are an obstruction to their idea of the world. We must die. We know that's what they want. We don't have illusions. And we're not a nation capable of fooling itself very much because reality bites you really quickly. We're not rich enough to entertain delusions. So, you know, that's what we get. That's why I've told you guys before. The problem is not the black people of Africa. The problem is white liberals in the West. They're the ones that want us dead like that. And they're the ones who support people like Malema and Ramaphosa and the ANC and so forth. Those are the people who carry water for them. Now, I was talking about the land. And the fact is that the farmers own exactly 21.8 or 9, call me a liar for 0.1% of that country's surface. The state owns 26%. So the state owns more than what the white farmers do. You don't see people in the streets wanting to kill the government because the government's not giving them their land. You see, the politics don't work that way. What the government does is it points at white farmers, accuses them of all kinds of things, and then sets the uneducated black masses on them. That's how it works. And in case you haven't noticed, that's what's been happening in a certain sense in the U.S. as well. You got a bunch of elites at the top setting the noisemakers at the bottom upon the guys in the middle. And that's happened before in history. It's an old trick. It partly happened in the French Revolution as well. What the government doesn't mention is that of the 122 million hectares in the country, there's only 37 million owned by private individuals. And when they talk about 80% of that is owned by whites, it's true. It's actually 71.9%, not 80. So, yeah, if you only look at individually owned parcels of land. But what happens when the government supposedly takes land from whites and gives it to black people? They don't give it to individual black farmers. They give it to what are known as CPAs, communal property associations. Now,
that sounds terrific.
Let's see what that is. First of all, they don't give them a title deed. Now, ain't that interesting? If you don't have a title deed, how the hell do you raise, how can you offer that as collateral for a loan, for example?
Right.
So you can't even go and buy seed stock because you can't raise a loan because you haven't got title.
Yeah, it's not actual ownership.
Yeah. So this is an out and out assault on property ownership. Write that down. What's going on in South Africa is a communist assault on private property ownership. They keep pointing at the few white farmers who own their land, which they bought and they have title for. Then when they do take land from white guys, and white people sell their land to the government and they get paid for that, and some do it willingly and some grudgingly, but they do. They give that to these communal property associations. Now, if you have a condo set up here in Canada, they refer to the governing body as a strata. In South Africa, they refer to it as a body corporate. I don't know what you call it in the States. What do you call it, the bunch of guys who get together to run a condo or a set of condos? There's a phrase for that.
I mean, they could be a homeowners association. They could be just regular investors.
No. There's usually a body that has to hold meetings, minuted meetings. They have to have a chair. They have to have a secretary to run these things. I'm pretty sure that's what you got in the U.S. as well.
Probably.
It probably varies by state. If I
never really lived in a condo, so I don't know.
Exactly. So I know I'm asking the wrong folks.
Yeah, sorry.
So the
condo illiterate.
You get the idea. But even in the U.S. and South Africa and Canada, the individuals in that thing hold their property. They hold title to that property. When this government takes the land of farmers, they do not give the recipients of that expropriated land title. And therefore, that land doesn't show up in the list of privately held land. And therefore, they can in perpetuity point at the handful of white farmers and say they own all the individually owned land.
That's a neat trick.
It's a self-fulfilling mathematical equation. It's a circular argument.
Now, do they have property tax? I mean, that property wouldn't be necessarily able to collect any property tax if the government owns it.
I'm not sure that they pay property tax on the communal stuff at all. I'm not that deep into it. But I can tell you that they don't have title. I can tell you that a handful of black farmers managed to get some land, and they couldn't get title. And they went to the much-hated White Farmers Association called AfriForum. They went there, and the White Farmers Association helped them to get title sorted out.
Those evil white farmers.
And they gave those farmers some seed to get going, and they plowed the land for them. Dear God, what more can these guys do to help?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it's pretty cagey, a group of people who, you know, can't do math, don't know what they want, and think that you can call a scientist and figure out how to control lightning, that they could come up with a scheme like that. That's pretty – that's actually
with that, I
fairly inexplicable.
To you, I describe for you what the Russians and the Soviets refer to as the proletariat.
Yes.
Okay. The guys at the top are the ones who wear the Gucci outfits, who can do a bit of maths and use that to mess everybody around, like by BSing you with numbers like I just explained.
Well, you're coughing there for a second, we've got to take a quick break again, believe it or not. I actually already sent her the song. I don't believe I have fumbled the ball on this. Thank goodness. It's almost the very end of the show. I've got it.
You finally got it down.
Da, da. There should be some kind of musical interlude. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Me and all my friends, we're all misunderstood. They say we stand for nothing, and there's no way we ever could. Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. Just feel like we don't have the means to rise above and beat it. So we keep waiting.
Yes, if only the real world wasn't so annoying. So, Harry, how do you see the Trump administration helping? Like, how can they help, or how do you think they will help?
Put the economic screws on that country as hard as they can. You're getting a new ambassador. He is likely to be a guy named Joel Pollack, who was actually born in South Africa but left with his parents at the age of 7 or something like that to grow up in Chicago. He then came back, spent 6 years in South Africa in his, I guess, 20s or 30s, and married a South African girl, went back to the States. Interesting thing is that during his stint in South Africa, he's Jewish, and he attended one of these great anti-racist shows that was held in Durban in 2002. And while sitting there in the stands looking at all this and watching Muammar Gaddafi arrive with a bunch of armored cars, he realized that this is actually an anti-Jewish hate fest.
Whoops.
So meet the American liberal Jew who saw the light.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, because all the American Jewish folks that I met in my life, I'm not talking about ones on TV, were all screaming liberals.
Yeah.
Well,
kind of a lot of
that. He got it straight in the face there. He could see what this was, and that was clearly a big, momentous event in his life. He is now a writer for Breitbart, editor for Breitbart, I think editor at large or something for Breitbart. And he was interviewed a couple of times in South Africa on the subject. And man, does he have his hands clearly around the subject. He knows it very well. I don't think I could tell him anything about this. I could tell him about the history of Afrikaners, yes, but about what's coming down in South Africa, he has it down exactly. And if he is confirmed, you can be damn sure there's going to be pressure on South Africa. I wouldn't be surprised if diplomatic relations are not stopped. He's quite clear that it's gone too far. It's all got to stop. And his departure point is not one of care for Afrikaners. It's that the U.S. cannot be involved with these clowns. These people are a danger to America. Talking about the ANC government, and it's got to be cut off. So I'm expecting stronger action against the ANC. They are sending deputations to go and speak. They are now through the denial phase. They sort of tinkered with anger, and that didn't work well. People are telling them, you know, as you said, F-A and F-O. And they tried the F-A part, and it clearly hasn't worked. So they're in the find-out phase. So what I would like, to be very precise, I want to have personal financial and travel sanctions on Malema specifically. There's one guy in another party who's gone on TV saying that white people are not human. They're a kind of animal and you should treat them accordingly.
Wow.
I want proper personal travel and financial sanctions on him. He's a parliament member. So that's what guys that sit in parliament are saying. A message has to be sent by the U.S. that this behavior at the top of a government is not acceptable in the world and will be punished. That's what I want. I want these people don't care about South Africa. You need to get that straight. They want to eat the corn and then lie fat and happy and wait until somebody brings more U.S. aid. They will never save that country. They don't have the ability. So the only thing you can do with them is punish them. Make them feel. Make them feel. And I'm pretty sure I speak for most South Africans when I say they'll take the associated pain, but punish these guys. Punish these people. Recalibrate them. Preferably, if they come and visit Trump, you should make them crawl through the door like my father-in-law had to crawl through a black chief's door of his hut.
Did he really?
Okay. Yes, really.
Dang.
So they need to be made to crawl. These people don't understand other behavior. They've gotten away with this for 31 years, where everybody turned a blind eye, and now they think it's cool. They score brownie points by saying whites are animals, we should kill them, etc., etc. And the more whites get killed, the more they shout it. This is hubris. An ostrich in the mating season, the male, its heels go red. These people have red heels. They are beyond helping at this point. They need to be punished. They need to be indoctrinated with reality. Mm. It's gone too far. You can't talk to them. I think if they attempt to talk to Trump, you should chase them the hell out of the country. Tell them, go back. We don't want to talk to you. You will do the following. Here are the conditions. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? You will not ship enriched uranium to Iran. You will not hold military exercises with Russia. You will not give them weapons on shady ships in Simonstown. Okay? Etc. You will not persecute people. You will take the 142 anti-white laws off your books. There's no place for racist laws in the world of 2025. Take them off the books. Take them off now. Okay, you want any further consideration from America, that's what you do. Otherwise, you know, you're done. Go and cozy up to China and see where it gets you. And I should just mention that one of the reasons why this government is expropriating very particular farms at the moment is because there's coal under the farms and they want to make a deal with China. This is about also keeping China happy. So they're trying to do white farmers out of their farms in order to sell mining rights to the Chinese. Anything to get money. They flew off to Iran and came back with a bunch of suitcases full of literally dollar bills. So thank you, Joe Biden. Some of that money came to South Africa in order that the money you gave back to Iran, some of it went to South Africa in suitcases carried by ANC delegates because they were bankrupt. They stole the country dry, and despite that, they bankrupt.
And so do they use that money to finance their military? Or, I mean, obviously they're not feeding their people. What are they doing?
No, they fund the actions of their party. Like, you know, you got to fund CPAC somehow. So they do the same there.
Hmm.
So you guys are the masters of fundraising for parties. So they do the same. They learn. The top brass of that operation, you know, they're communists. You need to understand that ANC government is in a three ways tripartite agreement, as they call it, themselves, the South African Communist Party, and the collective unions. That's an open tripartite agreement. You can look it up. So it's not by chance that Mandela was right in the core of the Communist Party. They denied it all the years, but the Communist Party itself declared it the day he died. He was always a much respected member of our Politburo.
Wow. And yet, okay. And that message has been pretty well buried.
So I thought you could play maybe just 2 minutes, if you could, of the clip that I mailed that says Ike Khumalo. He is a black advocate. He was jailed during the apartheid days. As he says, he was shot at. You know, he saw apartheid. He lived in it. But he's got a message for the present government of South Africa.
Okay. Tell us when to stop, because we're going to be up against the top of the hour.
Yeah. So just play 2 minutes of it, no more.
Okay.
Yesterday, I was doing the panel show, and I mentioned that apartheid was better than ANC democracy. Note that ANC democracy. And most people who dispute that are people who are not there. And some of the people, they come from the homelands where they were oppressed by their own black people. Someone will tell you that they didn't have electricity, but where were you? Because I can tell you, it was not always rosy, but in the townships which were governed by apartheid administration, things were better than now. Yes, there was segregation, but if you went into a black hospital, you will find all the necessities. If you went to a black school, you will find all those things that you needed to find. Let me break it this way. Education. There were schools. Zama Amba. Artisan, technical colleges, Abo Vista, designated for black people, but it was there. You go to some of the urban, you know, homelands under apartheid, like Abo Natal, you'll find universities, or Fort Hare. You go to Kososhanguve, Kososhanguve, there were, you know, facilities, infrastructure, that's why. In a township, we'll find a qualified plumber, a qualified technician, a qualified electrician, somebody who could fix cars with a certificate, and that person did a proper job, trained for free, mahala, go nico. We found those things. Art schools, they were everywhere. Go few, Bafunda Center, every township had a hall. Sports stars, reproduce auction, tennis players. Cyclists.
Okay, I guess you could.
So bottom line is things were pretty good, and then they blew themselves up.
They blew themselves up. He goes on for about 15 minutes, you know, and he ends everything, and he says, and we had all that under apartheid. And then he lists a bunch of stuff, and he says, we had all that under apartheid.
Wow.
And now there's nothing. Okay? So
If you send me the clips via email, I will post them so people can listen to the to them, okay. And share them and listen to the longer ones too.
I got caught by time in cleaning this one up, but I'll figure that out.
No worries, so it's not an emergency.
A little bit of a delay, and I'll send it.
Okay,
but folks, this is the basic story. President Trump has arrived as the special angel who was hardened against all of this by being shot at, attempted shooting a second time. He was basically, if you'll forgive me sounding marginally sacrilegious. He was crucified in this process and prepared for all of this. So,
yeah. Harry, we've hit the wall here. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
So, oh, things are going to develop pretty fast in South Africa. People are going to want to hear what's going on.
Absolutely. Our guest has been Dr. Harry Bouyans. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.